From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack, in for Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is being made with a question. What are your plans for Thanksgiving? That's being discussed throughout this week and likely into next as families decide how to safely gather or not gather to celebrate. It could be time for new traditions. Some listeners have told us they're cooking food together virtually or dropping off potluck Thanksgiving. Some are taking walks outside with friends and family and then heading home for dinner with just those in their households. Others are getting together in the more traditional sense, but putting different precautions in place and limiting the number of people attending. All of this is complicated, and the decisions come with emotions. What about people who feel isolated and need the social interaction of the holiday? What should you do if you feel pressured to attend a gathering but you're not comfortable? What if you have college-aged kids and you're wondering, should they come home for Thanksgiving dinner? There's a lot to consider this hour, and we explore what local people are doing to celebrate the holiday. And I want to say this. We're going to hear from listeners this hour, but no judgment, no shame, just conversation. We'll tell you what the experts recommend, but at the end of the day, these are personal decisions. We'll also talk about the emotions that come with a pandemic holiday. And my first guest who joins us for the hour is what many of our listeners have called a calm and reassuring voice. And that's Dr. Eric Kane, former chair of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Dr. Kane, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Megan. And it's nice to know that I'm thought of as a calm and reassuring voice.
Well, it's true. It's true. And I'll ask you this loaded question. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm doing well enough. You know, I take each day as it comes. I try not to look too far back and ask, you know, how many months have we been doing this, or too far ahead and say, how many more months? But, you know, try to look at each day and see where the sun is and what's happening with plants and outside, and keep myself grounded that way. So thank you for asking.
Well, it's like I said, it's a loaded question. Every day comes with a lot of uncertainty, and we've had some good news recently on the vaccine front. And, you know, as good as that is, we're still, you know, walking into the unknown in many senses of the word, especially when it comes to the holiday. And you're joining us to help us, as I said, navigate those uncertain emotions, the conflict, the stress, the tension, the worry. And what have you been hearing from your patients and the people that you've been talking to about the holidays, Dr. Kane?
Well, I have to say, I'm not seeing patients these days anymore, but I certainly am talking to a number of people. And one of the things that's really clear in the people I talk with and friends is that each seems to be coming up with their own set of solutions that seems to fit best for them. Mm-hmm. The circle of people I know clearly are very conscientious. And so, for instance, in my own family, we've decided that for Thanksgiving, we're going to stay apart and we're going to celebrate and come together for some sort of, how should I say, Zoom family gathering. My brother and I have been talking about that. He lives in Albany right now and sometimes goes to Florida, but he's not going to Florida this year. And my daughter's in Washington, D.C., and my son in Brooklyn. And my brother's family reaches to Washington and other parts of New York State. And we're looking forward to getting together and talking. And we try to talk very regularly. I think one of the things that I know a number of people have been doing, and certainly I've been doing during this time, is to make sure, almost to schedule a regular conversation so that sure, we can have the spontaneous call and the give and take, and we do that. But we also have some every week, knowing that we're going to be touching base and looking forward to that. And so we've developed that as a tradition, and I know others have done very similar things. And I know people who have, you know, cocktails together on a certain night of week, or you know, they make sure to meet up for, you know, kind of their weekly talk or their weekly coffee or whatever. And some of it's virtual. Occasionally, for some people, it's outside with, you know, a proper distancing, or, you know, if they're really in a, you know, a park or something, you know, up till recently, people have been able to do that even without wearing masks if they're far enough apart. So people are being very inventive, even as there's a burden. There's no question that there's a burden and a suppressing burden, and sometimes it's an oppressing burden, depending on where people are financially and socially. So we all try to talk about these things, and I've known some people who've gotten COVID and have come through it, but, you know, have lingering symptoms, for example. And so, you know, we're all trying to stick together.
I think that it sounds like your family came to an agreement about Thanksgiving relatively easily, or mutually. That's I'm sure that's happening with many families, but I also know, and I say this because we've received emails from listeners saying, I'm not sure what to do. I'm feeling pressure from my mother, my cousin, my aunt, my best friend, whomever, to attend a gathering. And I'm not quite there yet, but I don't know how to say no. I'm worried that saying no to this person will damage our relationship. What do you recommend for listeners who are experiencing internal conflicts with families, disagreements with families about how to handle these situations?
Well, this is one of those situations where I think we all have to accept and sort of walk up to our vulnerability. You know, I'm an older person now. You know, I have to recognize that I'm pretty fit and active, but you know, I'm 72, and you know, when this coronavirus started, I had to kind of admit, my heavens, you know, I'm in a high risk group just because I'm this age, even though I go out and do all sorts of things. And so part of it is our fear. You know, we're afraid, or sometimes, of being with other people. And the only thing I think to say in those situations is, I'm kind of afraid. And when, a lot of people will accept our fears. I mean, certainly when I was talking with my daughter and we were talking about, you know, my grandson being in daycare and her partner's son going, you know, to school or having, you know, camping and stuff of that sort, then I realized I have to be very, very careful. I have some fear. I don't want to die. I don't want to get really sick. And so having that, being open about that with other people is really, I think, very understandable and very important. Now, in my family, that wasn't an issue. My daughter happens to be a nurse practitioner, so she's as cautious as I am. But it's really clear that when you're feeling pressured by someone else, it's very important to say, you know, I love you dearly. I very much want to be with you, but I'm afraid. And please don't take it personally. Please don't feel offended. But understand that until, you know, I've gotten a vaccine or this is settled down, I really want to give my fear or my worry or my appropriate caution full right of way, because that will make me feel safer. And, you know, that sort of exposes yourself to someone else's criticism, but it's the most honest way to do it. And truly, most of the people that we know, when we do that, will be more protective. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, there are going to be some who may not be, but, you know, I don't think people should be going to situations where they're really upset and frightened and worried and, you know, just feel very anxious about it. Thanksgiving and all the religious holidays and all of our other holidays, you know, we've tried to make for times of joy and togetherness and reflection, you know, something like Veterans Day or Memorial Day or time for reflection. But we certainly want to have these holidays, these times of tradition and closeness, to be close. And if we can't be close physically, certainly we want to try to be close emotionally. Mm-hmm. And it's not ideal. It's, you know, something that, you know, none of us would have ever chosen. But, you know, I always think of giving voice to my anxieties as being one of the best ways to deal with them and to sit with them. You know, I can't run away from it. You know, you go out and you go to the store and you put on the mask, or you go somewhere else, you know, you don't want to get sick, so you take care.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know my colleagues Noelle Evans and April Franklin have been talking with a number of people in the community about how to maintain that level of closeness emotionally, whether it's in a virtual setting, on the phone, outside, and we'll talk to them in just a moment about what they've learned. But first, Dr. Kane, I think it's important for us to remind our listeners what the guidance is from Monroe County. I have a clip from Dr. Michael Mendoza, the Monroe County Public Health Commissioner, who was on this program yesterday. We asked him what he thought about Thanksgiving, a number of people asking him to provide some guidance there. And we'll play the clip in one moment. I will say he said prior to what you're about to hear that he thinks the most recent uptick in cases is due to Halloween. So people gathering indoors around Halloween, that's why we're seeing the spike locally. And he's concerned about what Thanksgiving could look like the weeks after Thanksgiving. So here's what he said yesterday.
You know, I'm not going to tell people, you know, that they can or cannot have a holiday. I think that that overly simplifies a very complicated decision. And frankly, I think people are smart enough to know that life is not black and white like that. But I'm certainly not saying, you know, open the doors and have a free-for-all. That would be very unwise. I do want people to be very, very careful, because at the end of the day, we hold our future in our own hands and in our gatherings that we may or may not have at Thanksgiving. And the last thing I want to do is tax our healthcare system, and that is where we're heading. And so we have to be very careful about Thanksgiving.
That's Dr. Michael Mendoza, Monroe County Public Health Commissioner, providing some guidance for the holiday. And I'd like to bring in my colleague Noelle Evans now, who has spent some time talking to people in the community about different ways to gather or not gather for the holiday. Her feature story was played this morning on Morning Edition. You can find it on our website, WXXINews.org. But Noelle, a lot to talk about. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So you covered a number of different ways that local people are handling the holiday. Let's start with Alex. I really enjoyed hearing what Alex and his family had to say.
And so to get all three of our households on a video call and all cooking the same recipe, and we got to learn our favorite family recipes like Albanian pie and learning other recipes and sharing them between us and getting the chance to cook them together separately has been really cool, and getting to learn from my mom how she cooks the different family recipes. And so that's what I'm hoping that we'll get a chance to do this Thanksgiving, is having that video call where we all cook together, and it gives us a chance to talk in between the cooking. And it's just the perfect amount of video call, real life experience to make it not feel like you're staring at a screen the whole time.
So that's Alex Turner, right, Noelle? You're talked to him a couple days ago.
Him. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I spoke with him and a few others. I might even adopt Turner's approach, where you get some family members together over a video call and you go through the same recipe together. That said, I mean, I'm personally not a very good cook, so I mean, it might save me. But there are a few other, it was also a very small sample size to keep in mind, so I'm sure others have other creative ways that they're going about it. Kelly Galvin, who I spoke with, she had her Thanksgiving early, that one early November weekend where it was unseasonably warm. Her family took advantage of it, and they gathered outside. And then Stephanie Townsend said that her plan is to, you know, have Thanksgiving over Zoom and just place, you know, the computer or the laptop on one side of the table. And then, you know, it's almost an extension of the Thanksgiving table in a virtual manner.
How did everyone seem when you spoke with them about the emotional side of it? Were they disappointed that they were having to make these accommodations? Was there a certain level of excitement maybe because they're starting a new tradition? How was the mood overall?
It was mixed. Honestly, I thought it was nice to be able to share that disappointment, because there's no sort of masking that. But there is a sense of joy in finding other ways of being able to connect and finding a way through. Because I think the isolation that people have been going through takes a tremendous toll. And, you know, when the holidays come up, you know, holidays can be very complicated, and I think that finding an alternative, I think there's a bit of relief that I heard as well.
Dr. Kane, when Noelle mentions that isolation, what should people do if they're considering how to handle the holiday? They're not comfortable getting together in person, but maybe they don't have adeptness with technology or access to technology. How would you encourage families to help, perhaps even people who are in nursing homes or otherwise, to handle some of the isolation that some folks may feel?
Well, you know, you're asking a complicated question. That was one of the words that Noelle used, complicated. This is all complicated because, of course, when you think back, I've been on the show with you and Evan before when we've talked about Thanksgiving and politics discussion. And sitting over the dinner table with the cranky uncle or something. You know, holidays are always complicated in some ways. You know, we come together, we want to have joy and warmth. And obviously, it's really hard to have joy and warmth when you can't come together. So acknowledging that, putting it out in the open, clearly in nursing homes and other congregate facilities, You know, we certainly hope that the facilities themselves take some effort to help their residents connect, even if they don't know how to connect themselves. And you know, whether it's with a tablet and a FaceTime or a Zoom or one of these other kinds of things, Skype, you know, where there can be some face-to-face connection. And, you know, sometimes people come together for the holidays and they don't, maybe because they're a little uncomfortable, actually sit and say, I love you, or it's wonderful to be with you. And it's sort of, they go through the rote traditions, and, you know, some people go watch football and other people cook and they come together for the meal. But, you know, this year it really puts a premium on letting people know how much you care. And that's not easy for all of us to say that to someone else. It's hard to make yourself open like that. But I think it's so important now to be as open and thoughtful and caring as possible, because, you know, we all need it. And so the idea of teaching someone how to use Zoom, you know, I talked to someone and they said, well, we're going to go through Zoom instructions beforehand so that when we try to get together on the holiday, we're not, you know, having to learn all those things, you know, right then and there. We're already starting to talk about Christmas and, you know, my daughter and her family coming up. Well, you know, they're already planning a quarantine strategy, and my son in Brooklyn. And so that they're already, you know, planning how long are they going to isolate themselves so that they can come up here and see me, see my ex-wife, who's also older, and, you know, but do it safely so that, you know, the older generation isn't stricken, but can also feel comfortable. And I think that's the other thing, which is when we take protective measures, we help people feel more comfortable. So it isn't just protection for ourselves. I mean, one of these things about the mask debates is, you know, part of it is to protect other people, but we know that surgical masks protect the person who's wearing it. And lo and behold, those data have come out now to underscore that the protection is really in both directions. So this is a time when we think about our consideration for others and our protection for others and as part of our caring for others. Mm-hmm. And all those things are out front now. As I say, you know, telling people how you feel is part of that first step.
That's so true. And I know some families may struggle with that more than others. But I think we're looking at a very different world this year, a very different holiday. And I think it puts things in perspective for many people. I speak for myself in that regard. I know many friends that I've spoken with have that same thought process. Noelle, I know you have to run. She has a full work day ahead of her. But I want to ask you before we let you go, Noelle, what are your plans for the holiday?
I was just talking to my mom about this yesterday, and she said she's going to place an iPad on their, like, knockoff Roomba, just like a disc-shaped vacuum robot, and then just, like, have it roam around by video call. I'm not sure what it would accomplish, but I did appreciate
the
sentiment. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Or maybe, you know, something like the dog will be chasing me. I don't know. But I, you know, she's a clever woman. Actually, Dr. Kane, I had a question for you. For people who have, you know, maybe lost loved ones this year, either to COVID-19 or otherwise, you know, I can imagine the holidays could hit them pretty hard. And I wonder what you would advise or, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is true in any era, that the holidays, like, for instance, in a similar fashion to, say, the anniversary of someone's death. You know, the holidays really bring this home in a very painful way. And over the years when I've been asked this, I usually try to understand how people deal with this spiritually and emotionally and also with their remaining loved ones. And it varies. I mean, I've known people who've gone and visited, you know, someone's gravesite in the day or two before someone, they just sat and talked about the person and reminisced. Or they sat alone and thought about the good things in their lives, even as they sit with their sorrow, too. I think one of the things that we always have to remember is, it's, you know, in these sorts of situations, we can't get away from our sorrow. It isn't like you can drink it away, smoke it away, walk away from it, because it'll come and get you anyway, because, you know, if we're conscious, we're going to have it. And so I think that being able to just kind of acknowledge it and think about those things, and then think about our loved ones and who's passed and who's gone. And I certainly think about my parents sometimes, at times of year like this. And when I was little and we were doing things and what the house was like and, you know, who might be there. And, you know, I get sad about that. And, you know, my father died 20 years ago, and my mother nearly 30 years ago, but it's still fresh when you bring it up at times like this. And that's good, because it means you're alive. Means you're a person with feeling, and these are the things that you can share with the people around you who care about you and who you care about.
Mm.
Well, thank you, Noelle, reporter and producer for WXXI News. You can find her work at WXXINews.org. Noelle, thank you. I'm sure I'll see you
thank
soon.
You so much.
If I don't see you in person, happy Thanksgiving.
You as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
All the best to you.
Dr. Kane, all the feedback is pouring in regarding people's different plans for Thanksgiving. Some questions for you. The phone is starting to ring. Listeners, if you have questions for Dr. Kane, if you want to share your Thanksgiving plans, 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Here's an email from Elizabeth. She says, why must we be wed to one calendar date to give thanks or celebrate any holiday for that matter? We can gather one-on-one on different days over the course of a week or two for intimate and quality connections with each person. And after we're all vaccinated, we can celebrate with a shared meal that includes more safety and peace of mind. I have a friend, actually, who is having an all-holidays party once a vaccination is widespread, where she'll have a different holiday, each room in her house themed for that holiday. So people finding really interesting ways to handle this. And let's hear from our first guest on the phone. This is Erin in Columbus. Hi, Erin.
Hi, Megan.
Hi. You wanted to share your holiday plans?
I do. So originally... So my family lives everywhere. We don't live in the same states at all. So holidays mean traveling no matter what. So I decided that my husband and I were going to quarantine for 2 weeks before going to travel to Delaware to see my mother for the holidays. Originally, we had flights, which obviously we canceled. And then we were going to drive, and it's like, it's 9 hours, but we really want to see her. And, you know, we'll just quarantine. It'll be fine. We'll get tested before we go. But then everything started to get worse. And before I could even make the call, my mom actually, who has kind of poo-pooed on a lot of the precautions, and I've had to sternly talk to her about wearing masks and et cetera, she actually called me to cancel Thanksgiving. So it's actually just going to be my husband and I and our pets for Thanksgiving. And unfortunately, my mom's not very tech savvy, so Zoom isn't an option. She doesn't even have the internet, but obviously we'll call her. So yeah, I mean, it's just everyone's dealing with things the way that they can, but we have to make sure that we protect these people, that we'll be able to celebrate with them next year. Because, you know, my mom had strokes recently. My stepfather had heart attacks, and I definitely don't want to put them at risk by exposing them to me and whatever I bring with me from Ohio.
Does your mom canceling Thanksgiving bring some sense of relief to you? You're not the one who had to make a decision or have a difficult conversation?
Yeah. I mean, I was worried about disappointing her and possibly her deciding to come here instead. So yeah, it was a relief to not have the stress of worrying about, you know, I do go to work full time, so I was going to try to avoid people as much as possible. But, you know, there's always a chance that maybe I come into contact with someone even wearing a mask. So even taking the best precautions, you know, there was still stress around it, even getting a test. But, you know, we'd have to get the test 4 days before we go, and who knows what can happen in those 4 days. It's just there's too many variables. So, yeah, it was a nice relief. It's also kind of nice to not travel for the holidays for once.
Dr. Kane, did you want to weigh in?
Yeah, no, I was going to say this is a really good example of somebody who, facing this, decides to take control. You know, one of the really central problems that I think we're all confronting with COVID is we feel out of control. You know, here's this thing, this mysterious thing. You know, we can't see it really, but it kills, sweeping across the United States and sweeping across the world. We don't know, you know, whether we're transmitting it or not, receiving it or not. And here's somebody who says, I need to take control. Now, control is much smaller in some ways than we might always want. But it's a sense of, you know, use the term agency. It's a sense of, you know, being in command to the extent that you can. And I see this as really important because it means we're not totally helpless. And of course, we know that, in fact, and this has been one of the big struggles in the country, is we're not helpless in many ways if we were doing all the public health precautions, because you kill the virus that way. It can't replicate. It can't spread if it can't infect people. So, you know, this has been one of the real challenges, which is how do you exert control over something you can't see? But in theory, you could do it if you all did it together. Seeing mom do it together is really great.
Yeah, Aaron, I'm glad to hear that things are working out for your family. Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
And happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, you too, both of you.
Thank you. As we talk about mothers, here's an email from Philip. Some questions for you, Dr. Kane. Philip says, I'm concerned about my mother's mental health. She's 75 and lives in another state. I have not seen her since last Christmas. I'm not going home for Thanksgiving, but my two brothers are planning to go home to be with her for Christmas. I'm on the fence. She's not pressuring anyone. She's been reasonable about it. I'm deeply, deeply concerned about her health because she smoked for 40 years and has had serious cases of pneumonia in the past. COVID would be very bad for my mother. She seems to be following health guidelines, but I know deep down she wants her children home for Christmas. I'm worried about the mental health impact on her if we don't go. I realize, of course, that COVID could be worse than anything. But how do we quantify the mental health impact? Again, she's not telling us that we must come home. She's leaving it up to us. But I know that opening gifts on Zoom is not going to feel like Christmas to her, and it would leave a void. We typically go home for the better part of a week. We enjoy meals and gifts and traditions. How can I determine whether the mental health impact is going to be bad enough that I should go home for the holidays, even with the risk of COVID? That's from Philip.
Wow. That's a hard one because, of course, you know, I don't know your mom and don't know her situation, but I think there are things that you can do which make a difference. And this picks up on what Dr. Mendoza was talking about. And I sort of alluded to it when I was talking about my daughter coming home. You can quarantine yourself. You can do things which radically reduce the probability that you're going to bring the infection home. If you're driving your own car, for example, that means you don't have to go to an airport. If you did have to go to an airport, even in the airplanes are probably much safer than the airport themselves because they're cleaned and they have, you know, big HEPA filters and circulate the air a lot. But if you had to, you'd wear gloves, you'd wear a mask, you'd, you know, like the health worker who comes home from the hospital, you'd take off your clothes, put them into the wash right away, go take a shower. There are all sorts of things that you can do to fundamentally reduce transmission. Now, I'm a psychiatrist, not an infectious disease doc, so I say those things because I've certainly thought about them and read about them. But that type of stringency, that type of caution, helps reduce the emotional burden of going and seeing your mom if you have to, if you decide that's really what's important to do. So these are things that are predictable in the sense that, you know, healthcare workers have gone to the hospital every day. They've gone home every day. We know that healthcare workers, by and large, you know, you take something like the University of Rochester, you know, the healthcare workers here who've gotten COVID, I can't speak of other places, have gotten it when they're outside the building, not inside the building. They don't get it from working in the health environment. They get it, you know, some of them from, you know, their family interactions or their community interactions. So you can take the kinds of precautions that they take every day and not carry infection. And that's really the point. If you're going to go see your 75-year-old mom and she's vulnerable, then the expectation, I'll put it, the obligation is on you to make sure that you carry out maximum level safety precautions. And CDC and others have, you know, all of those and more.
I think another issue that we should discuss, Dr. Kane, is there are some families who, when they hear people say, it's just one dinner, it's just one year, but you don't understand my situation. My father, mother, grandmother, their health is not good. They are, you know, maybe terminally ill. This could be our last Thanksgiving. This could be our last Christmas. There's so much more emotional weight to that, much more to consider. And I think we should be giving people the space and the grace to make their own decisions. What would you tell people who are in those situations?
Well, I'm not saying don't go home. I'm just saying understand that there are things that you can do, to use the public health term, that profoundly mitigate the risk of transmission. So this is something you can do with a better level of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
That if you carry out these precautions, you have tremendous latitude. You know, that when we started in February and March, when we heard about this in January, it all seemed very mysterious. And admittedly, the virus is still invisible, but it's not mysterious anymore. People know a tremendous amount about how to stay safe in terms of using masks, washing hands, using social distancing, and all those things. And it's very clear, for example, that, you know, you can send, you know, people, look at the Army, look at the Marines, you know, they bring in people from all over the country. And, you know, the military has figured out how to prevent COVID from spreading all across the military. You know, people quarantine for a couple of weeks, they come in, you know, they stay healthy, they live in a bubble, they make their bubble. We know people, I certainly know people where they have sort of social bubbles. They'll have two or three best friends that are in their social bubble and they all follow the same rules. So I think people should make their own decisions, and I think they should really weigh with great care what their loved ones need.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that context say, okay, how can we do this safely? And there's a lot of guidance for that.
Absolutely. And some feedback is pouring in on Twitter right now about what people are doing, whether it's having smaller gatherings or doing something entirely different. Dorothy says, we're getting together for a walk in outside fire pits with hot cider in the morning. At least we'll be able to see extended family, if only in a non-traditional way. I'm thinking it could be a new tradition as a result of necessity this year. That's from Dorothy. Holly says, locking in 48 hours prior to gathering. Gathering has gone from 15 people to 6. Modified menu, prepping and delivering meal ahead of time to locals not coming, including two older regulars, mom and neighbor. Watch Christmas Vacation, rock painting, Zoom later. A nice little mix there. Mary Caitlin says, dinner with our household and Zoom with our Ohio family. And then a handful of listeners talking about dropping off meals, taking turns making different dishes, dropping them off to friends and family. So listeners, the phone, we're going to get to as many of your calls as we can next after we hear from more from Dr. Kane and my colleague April Franklin, who's going to weigh in on how some local families with college-aged children are handling the holiday. You can join the conversation, 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can also email the program at connections@WXXI.org. And you can find me on Twitter at MMacMedia. So short break, more Connections next.
I'm Evan Dawson. Coming up in our second hour, Jen Lunsford joins us. She is the assembly person elect in the 135th Assembly District, winning by just 684 votes in her race against longtime Republican incumbent Mark Johns. One of the closest races all across New York State. And we needed all the absentee ballots before we knew who won. We'll talk to Jen Lunsford about that experience and what she plans to do next hour.
This is Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking about different approaches to the Thanksgiving holiday, whether you are gathering, whether you are not gathering, you're on Zoom, you're doing some kind of virtual situation. Lots of ideas in our community. And I'm joined by Dr. Eric Kane, former chair of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Rochester Medical Center. He's helping us navigate some of the tough emotional questions that come with, I know this word is overused, but an unprecedented year, an unprecedented holiday. And joining us on the phone now is my colleague, April Franklin, who's been doing some work on this. April, thanks for joining us.
Hi, good afternoon, Megan. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. And it's your day off, so thank you, Eve. Thank you so much for taking the time. April works so hard. So, April, I know you spoke with a number of families over the last week about how they're handling the pandemic holiday, especially when it comes to kids in college, whether or not they're coming home, if they're being tested. Talk about some of what you learned.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to quite a few parents this week, and a couple parents in particular. There's a woman named Hillary Bluestein Lyons. She has two sons that actually attend college in New York State, and another woman named Tracy McGrath. One of her children actually attends college in Sarasota, Florida. And so, talking to them, I've learned, you know, this year, obviously, with a lot of the restrictions, there's just so much to consider. When people are traveling, whether you're hosting somebody or you're traveling yourself. So they are having these conversations, you know, well before the kids actually, you know, show up from college.
Mm-hmm. So let's start with Hillary, her two sons in college. One, I think, is at Fredonia, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. What have they decided for their family?
Both of her sons are going to come home for the Thanksgiving holiday. And I asked her, you know, do you have any reservations? We're talking about Hillary, correct?
Yes, Hillary.
Sorry. So Hillary, she doesn't have any reservations. She actually had a couple of scares with exposure to COVID. I think one of her sons at his school had to be quarantined and, you know, but she feels like the colleges have been doing a really great job in keeping everybody safe. And her kids personally have been really having a lot of reservations about being around other people. So she feels okay with them coming home.
We have a sound clip from Hillary talking about that exact thing. So let's listen to what Hillary had to say.
For students who live on campus, I feel pretty safe about him coming home. My son, who goes to Fredonia, he lives off campus in an apartment, and he's been pretty restrictive about the people he spends time with.
So that's Hillary Bluestein Lyons. And just as some context for our listeners, Berkeley Breen at WHEC talked to a number of different colleges about their plans for testing. RIT got a shipment of tests from the state. It's making available to its students, but not requiring students to take before leaving campus. On the other hand, the University of Rochester, according to Berkeley Story, got 10,000 rapid tests delivered to test every undergraduate living in an on-campus dorm before they go home for the holiday. SUNY students are required to test before they leave campus. Nazareth College has a shipment of tests from the state, but students don't have to get those tests or take those tests. So lots of different situations locally. April, looking at the group of parents that you talked to, what was their general sense of the testing?
They felt pretty comfortable. And also, we have to keep in mind that some schools started a little bit later this year. So some schools are not even really having like a extended weekend for Thanksgiving. So a lot of people are choosing not to go home for Thanksgiving and choosing instead to go home for the Christmas holiday break. It's a little bit longer. That's what the other mother, Tracy, decided to do with her daughter, that she'll be coming. She will forego Thanksgiving and come home for Christmas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So let's listen to a little bit about what Tracy had to say. Normally she has pretty big gatherings, but here's what she had to say about this year.
Usually we've got about 17 to 20 people here, and this year it's just going to be the three of us. We've already discussed it. Nobody feels comfortable having people in the house. Nobody wants to expose anybody.
So that's Tracy McGrath making a decision for her family. And April, her daughter is staying in Florida, and I know they're considering what to do about Christmas. Do you want to share what she said about the upcoming Christmas holiday?
Yeah, I mean, right now it'll be about 4 or 5 weeks before she actually makes her trip, but they're actually trying to figure out the ins and outs of that. So they're making the plan now on when she'll get tested and what day she'll get tested. And that's why I think a lot of people are choosing to forego the for their students to travel during Thanksgiving, because it's such a short weekend holiday that to go through the, you know, quarantine for 3 days, by the time you're finished, you know, you're not going to really have much of a vacation. So right now they're planning, Tracy's planning what day her daughter will do her testing, what day she'll do. So they're making sure that everything is all set and put together well before she arrives.
Mm-hmm. April, what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
Well, we're going to keep it really, really small. My sister and my mother actually live together, so I'm going to go visit them, but obviously, you know, make sure that I'm testing negative and I'm in the clear without symptoms or anything. I normally would go to Ithaca to go visit my grandmother, who's in her 80s, and talking to my siblings. We decided against it just because for her safety and well-being, especially with under yellow zone precautions, we just want to make sure that my grandmother is in her best health. So we're foregoing our trip to Ithaca this year, unfortunately.
Grandma Pam, right? Grandma Pam?
Grandma Peggy.
Grandma Peggy.
We won't get her delicious banana pudding this year. I'm going to be so upset, but I'm going to make sure we call her. And, you know, we're going to make sure we try to connect in spirit and virtually and over the phone. It's a different year, but, you know, I think as long as we keep each other's health in mind, I think it'll be okay.
Well, thank you. April Franklin, my colleague, reporter, and Weekend Edition host for WXXI News. You can hear her every Saturday and Sunday morning, also during the week. Thank you so much, April.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Kane, a few more questions coming in, and one of them is addressing the concept of loss, which Noel brought up earlier. Some people saying that it's going to be very difficult looking at an empty chair at the dinner table. And what are some ways that they can help their kids cope with loss around the holidays?
Well, of course, there are going to be two kinds of empty chairs, aren't there? There are going to be the empty chairs of people who are missing but on the phone or on the Zoom, and there are going to be empty chairs of people who died from COVID this year or from other causes. And, you know, one of the things that I think we all have to deal with is loss and helping kids understand when their grandparents die or sometimes when a parent dies and or a friend or an animal. You know, one of the earliest things is when your pets die or something of that sort. So it's always, I think, a tremendous challenge for parents to feel open about this and talk about how important it is, but also, you know, to help a youngster who doesn't have much understanding work through it. And there's no easy formula. I've always taken the approach of talking about the loss and how I feel and how I am handling it as a model or an example. You know, I can't tell someone else how they feel, but I can say, you know, this is how it feels to me or something of that sort. And after the loss of my parents, for example, and being able to explain that what I'm going through to my kids as a way of being open about it, but not forcing them to say anything in particular, because they'll say it when they're ready to say it. Mm-hmm. Holidays bring that up. And this year, you know, we know already that over 250,000 people have died from this. We know that's an underestimate, in fact, because all of the data suggests that there are other, you know, there's just a much higher mortality rate this year than year over year comparisons that go beyond that 250. And whether that is, you know, what we'll call it silent COVID or undiagnosed COVID or people who didn't get care because they were afraid of going to the hospital or the stress of all of this. I don't know the answer to that, but it's very clear that we're going to face that. And I think it's a difficult time. And the coming together of the holidays and all the wonderful joy that we can have from family reunion and family closeness also emphasizes how much heartache we can sometimes have from those empty chairs. Mm-hmm. And so I always think it's important to talk about all of that in some way that doesn't pressure others, but makes it okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dr. Kane. A few more listener comments as we get to the end of our hour here. And up next on the phone is Jane in Rochester. Go ahead, Jane.
Hi, Megan. A couple of weeks ago or so, Donald Trump said, when he was asked about COVID, that he wasn't doing anything more on COVID. No stimulus, no help for the hospitals, nothing. Okay, in October, it was said by Dr. Mendoza that people felt that the Halloween celebrations contributed to the increase in cases. And we're sitting here, we've learned that now. I mean, maybe not everybody believes that Halloween had anything to do with the cases. We had protests going on with people without masks and so forth. There were a lot of things. But we've been told that it's believed that that's why the numbers have escalated in cases. And we're talking about Thanksgiving and saying, well, we want to be polite and we want to respect people's personal decisions. We have no choice. But that personal decision does affect other people. And let's see. With children, and I just say, if you're not going, I think that's a very responsible thing to stay at home at this time. And, you know, you wonder about, okay, Thanksgiving, there may be a further increase, and Christmas may be a real bust-up. Thank you very much, Megan.
You're welcome, Jane. Thank you for calling.
Jane, maybe I can put it this way. We're saying that people should make informed decisions, and that in making those informed decisions that fits their needs and the like, they can take precautions. They can do things which will fundamentally change the apparent risk of the situation. So it's really that, I think, that we're stressing, not that people should make a decision one way or the other in terms of getting together or not. I mean, we know what Dr. Mendoza says. We know what the state regulations are, and those are very wise and thoughtful. But if someone feels the urgency, like going and visiting his 75-year-old mother because of what may arise in her well-being, if he doesn't visit and his brothers don't visit, then what can he do in order to make sure this is a safe interaction? You know, I think one of the other things, and I just wanted to mention this, Megan, is that, you know, kids are going to come home from college, and the colleges have been very responsible in working very hard in all sorts of ways. And really, there's been, when you look at colleges, certainly in our region, you know, they've worked very hard and haven't had these outbreaks as we saw, say, at the University of Alabama or North Carolina, where they had to shut the school down. But what's clear is there may be some tension in the house when the college student says, well, I want to go out and visit my friends. Mm-hmm. I'm home and, you know, I'm going to be home. You know, some schools are, you know, taking a break between Thanksgiving and the start of the campus year in January. You know, they started a little early. Well, you know, how are the families going to deal with it? That's going to be a challenge that may arise.
That's so difficult. We heard from a listener who said they have a 20-something-year-old daughter who works in a public place, a store. I won't name names, but and likes to go out and socialize with her friends, which that's what people do. But they said to her, it was a very difficult conversation. I'm sorry, but if you're going to do that, please, you know, wait a couple weeks before you come around the house. So it's so complicated, so difficult. I recorded an interview with my colleague Julia Figueres earlier this morning about a situation in her family. Her daughter lives in Washington, D.C., wants to come home for the holiday. They're not sure how they're going to handle it yet because of testing and just some concerns about safety. And as Julia told me in the interview, which I'll post in my Twitter feed, she's in a high-risk category, she and her husband, due to their age, and she's just worried. So they're navigating those difficult questions and emotions as well. I don't think this is easy for anyone. And even if you're fortunate enough, yeah, and if you're fortunate enough to say, well, I'm just going to buckle down with my household and do things as normal, maybe we won't see extended family. Go ahead, Dr. Kane.
Yeah, I'll give a personal example. I mean, my son was going to come up here in the summer at one point, but he was going to visit a friend in the Adirondacks. And I thought, okay, well, this is one guy who's going to go. They're going to be there for a week together. Big house, whatever. Turned out there were 8 other people there. So I phoned with him and I said, well, there are 8 other people there. I certainly hope you don't get COVID, but make sure you don't come and visit when you thought you were going to come until you've isolated yourself. Mm-hmm. And I just said it with, you know, kind of like, yeah, I want to see you. I just don't want to see you until you've isolated yourself. And he got it. He didn't dispute it or anything, but it was that, the other side of it, it was a very matter-of-fact discussion that we've been having all along, which is, we want to get together. What are we going to do? How are we going to do it? Mm-hmm. And what does it take to be safe and still have the love and the warmth and the fun and the relaxation of being together?
Right. In our final minute or so, some more reaction from our listeners on Twitter. Steven says, son number one coming home from college on Saturday will quarantine and then test on Wednesday. Son number two just tested negative at school yesterday. We hope to do a drive-by with grandparents next Saturday. No real contact. Thanksgiving will be at home, the four of us, with lots of Zooms. Another listener says, we were planning on hosting at Graham's house. However, due to the recent spike in having multiple family members who work in high-risk environments like grocery stores, restaurants, and medical scenarios, we decided to cancel. Graham and I will be enjoying a small home-cooked meal and decorating the Christmas tree. And here's Renee saying, we normally go to two houses on Thanksgiving. This year we'll be staying in our own and cooking for two. And everyone we'd normally be gathering with is doing the same, gathering in their own bubbles. We'll be doing a Zoom cocktail hour to say hi before eating. So options out there, listeners, but I think it all, Dr. Kane, at the beginning of the hour, you made the point about fear. If you are nervous, if you are uncomfortable, and it's difficult to have conversations with your families about this stuff, Dr. Kane, you say, express your fear. Yes?
Yes. You know, this isn't the time to be shy. We have to take control of our lives in the way, especially now when it's so hard, we have to do it in a very way that's planful and open.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Kane. Dr. Eric Kane, former chair of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Rochester Medical Center, thank you for taking the time. Thank you for being honest about everything that's so difficult about this pandemic, and happy Thanksgiving.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to work with you, Megan.
And thanks to my colleagues as well, Noelle Evans, April Franklin, Rob Braden's our engineer. Evan will be back with you next hour talking to Assemblymember-elect Jen Lunsford. Thanks for listening.